the point that, you know, that I think was made in the Intercept article, which is that, yeah, it's a political issue in a different way. If an agent of the state is killing somebody in performance of their duty, then if somebody who's a criminal who would face justice if they were caught is killing them. And there's a sense in which that's certainly true. And that was my point in the article. But reading your article just now, or that was in that argument, but reading your article just now, yeah, Lee and Adam actually had a point here I wasn't really seeing, you know, which is that, which is also right, that that this is, you know, this is a very bad look. This is avoidably a very bad look. You know, that if not that there's not a sense in which a different sort of issue is raised, you know, by police killings, but that that if, you know, I guess I can't improve on the way that you put it there, but I mean that this like treat one of those things as an issue of grave importance and sort of manifestly seeming uncomfortable with any discussion of the other one of those things is something that is probably wrong in itself and certainly sends a politically counterproductive message if you want to win support for people who are most rationally worried about that happening.
Yeah, I think I think that's an excellent point that you raised, and something that I actually had a paragraph sort of cut from the article talking about this specifically. But yeah, I mean, I think that my view on it is it just needs to be like.
Oh, sorry, Eric, I lost you. Are you still there?
I think I'm there.
Okay. I can hear you. Okay, yeah, you just froze for a second. You started saying my view.
Yeah, so I just think that there are these kind of arguments that that make a lot of sense in one context, and then but they become sort of a reflex and aren't really thought through, so... My view is that, you know, in the context of debates about police killing, it is very often the case that the right wing will invoke, you know, quote unquote, black on black crime, right, as a rhetoric to simultaneously derail the conversation about police reform and also, you know, either implicitly or explicitly say that, like, look, like the cops got to break a few eggs, you know, in order to keep these people safe when they're, you know, whatever. I mean, there is a very, very racist version of this argument that is very prominent, right? And so it is obviously, in my view, wrong for people to try to preempt or say that we can't talk about police violence because of this other issue. At the same time, when we're in a context where, you know, we're not deflecting from a conversation about police violence, at least not directly, that's not the main thing that's happening right now, then, yeah, there is this instinct where, like, to bring this argument up anyway and sort of treat any sort of indication of it as an attempt to pin, you know, this on, you know, blaming the victims of, you know, over-policing, abusive policing, et cetera. And then there's also just this, yeah, element of, as you were saying, like, I 100% agree, like, in any individual homicide, if it's committed by a police officer, that's obviously inherently more political, inherently a bigger subject of civic concern, especially if it goes unpunished, because now we're threatening the, you know, most basic rights that citizens can have against the state, than any individual criminal killing. At the same time, when there is a very large disproportion between the number of each, and we're just not deflecting from the former, but just trying to have a conversation about the latter. I think that at that point, emphasizing, downplaying the other kind of violence on the grounds that, you know, the first kind is the only one sort of that concerns the state is actually a libertarian argument, I think, not a progressive one, as far as the state is only implicated in violence when direct agents of it commit the violence, right? That the state is not implicated in violence when it concentrates the descendants of slaves in disinvested, disinvested neighborhoods of deindustrializing cities, denies them job opportunities, cuts social support, and refuses to regulate the gun trade. You know, the state is very implicated. You know, it is the government is implicated in these personal acts of violence because, you know, state policy structures our whole social environment. You know, I think that's the left argument. You know, it's a libertarian argument, in my opinion, that only the police killing should concern the state and thus concern us politically. So yeah, that was just a whole line of thought that I had around that specific tension.
No, that seems exactly right. And you know, you make the point in the piece that it's just not, even if there's some sense that if we were all, you know, ideal utility calculating machines, then, you know, we'd get exactly as worked up about every cause of death, but, you know, realistically, we're not going to, you know, certainly the media is going to cover violent crime in a different way than it's going to cover, you know, excess deaths that are caused by air pollution, you know, and part of that, you know, and there might be a legitimate media critique in there, but also part of why they do that is that just we as humans are just primed to respond in a different way to people being shot to death than, you know, than having medical problems that might be exacerbated by various, you know, et cetera, right? So this is going to be something on people's radar. It's most particularly going to be something on the radar of people in the communities that are most afflicted by violent crime, who obviously we need to reach out to in order to, you know, elect socialist office, certainly, and for all sorts of other purposes. And it's, if we, you know, if we seem to be de-emphasizing it or to be uncomfortable when it's brought up, you know, then we, you know, at the very least, we look like we're not confident that our vision of criminal justice is going to address the problem. So there's like a little bit of mixed news at the end, but like, you know, you do lay out a bunch of good news about like the evidence to the contrary, which, you know, might be a hard argument to make, but is probably an easier argument to make than stop caring about violent crime. And you lay out a bunch of ways in which actually things that the left typically advocates would absolutely reduce violent crime.
Yeah. So there's, you know, a range of studies about different types of social investment that have been, at least in some context, associated with declines in crime. There was a very large, particularly large relationship found in one paper from the Medicaid expansion in terms of reducing crime, and that actually I think it was a more cost efficient in terms of its effect on crime, you know, than increases in policing staff, at least comparing some studies to each other. And this was largely a result of Medicaid expansion gaining a lot of people suffering from addiction access to treatment, you know, who didn't have it, and therefore, I think, you know, made it easier for them to, you know, to develop lifestyles that did not involve criminal offenses, you know, because they weren't driven by this imperative to you know, as a poor, you know, addicted person to feed their addiction. So that was one major one. Investments in, you know, violence interrupters, community leaders who can sort of intervene, can sense when, you know, sort of gang tensions, when interpersonal tensions in a community are acting up to intervene and try to mediate in some form. You know, they've been very successful in certain contexts. In certain contexts, they've been sort of less effective, but there's clearly a way to do this in which it is very effective. Jobs programs, especially summer jobs programs, you know, I think there are many reasons, and the most obvious one being, you know, just heat itself, why crime spikes in the summers. But I think one, you know, is that we have institutional support for adolescents for, you know, whatever 9 months of the year, and then it just drops away. And if you aren't, you know, in a class where you can afford to send your kids to summer camp or to, you know, whatever sort of, you know, SAT training and educational whatever, you know, there's sort of a lag there. And so I think there are studies showing that giving people, you know, whether it's employment opportunities or other sort of institutional outlets during the summer can also help. And then there's also been studies on wages and recidivism, where both geographically looking at areas with relatively higher wage floors, whether through statute or just labor market conditions, and areas that don't, you see that, you know, former offenders or the informally incarcerated tend to stay out of prison and not get arrested and reintegrate into society at a higher rate where wages are higher. And there's, I think, a similar impact just within individual locations, at least in some studies, after the minimum wage is lifted, that we see recidivism go down a bit. So I think, you know, the full progressive alternative to the carceral framework, you know, in many contexts will require federal investment. And I think that is one tricky aspect of this, is that depending on what kind of city you're in and what its finances are like, you know, there was a very good Catalyst Journal article 2 years ago, you know, about the just brute fact that incarceration for all its costs is cheaper than a welfare state, a full Nordic welfare state, like as an alternative. And so a lot of cities are not going to have necessarily the base to do as much investment as is, you know, optimal. Nonetheless, there are still resources at the municipal level that can be taken advantage of. And we've seen in, you know, New York City, this is not, this is also, according to some studies, I think, like a long-term crime preemption sort of program, although it's kind of funny to think of it in that way. And I wouldn't think of it primarily in that way, but we have been able to establish pre-K, you know, and we can fund some social programs at the municipal level that will really make a difference, along with these other more targeted, like the violence interrupter, you know, more sort of immediate ways of addressing the issue. And then there's obviously then the sticky, complicated subject of, you know, handguns themselves, depending on where you are within the broad progressive, you know, milieu, gun control is either a progressive issue or, you know, it is, you know, actually contrary to the mission of decarceration, because how do you enforce gun laws? Do you arrest people when they have guns? But there's things like buybacks, you know, there's ways to do this that don't involve incarceration, that involve carrots, not sticks.
Yeah, so there is so things ranging from handgun buybacks to violence interrupters to having you know, higher minimum wage, to jobs programs, drug treatment, all of these things that the left typically supports. There is evidence they do reduce the rate of violent crime. And very importantly, I should also say that, like, one thing that the evidence does not support can reduce violent crime is long prison sentences. I mean, that's what people typically think will, but, I mean, it just doesn't. You have been watching a free public preview for a Patreon-exclusive episode of Give Them an Argument. To get the rest of this episode, plus Patreon-exclusive episodes every single Thursday, as well as Patreon-exclusive postgames after the regular show every Monday night, and a lot more, head over to patreon.com/Ben Burgess. As a friend of mine used to put it, why be foolish?